This is the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Hopefully everybody had a good Thanksgiving weekend. I know that you all were here on Friday, and while you were doing a radio show on Friday, there was a football game that was taking place between Notre Dame and North Carolina, so I'm sure there was some distraction going on.
You did not prepare me for that in the pandemic. Remember in the pandemic when we had nothing?
There was nothing going on.
I was listening to a clip of the Iron Chef radio that my wife saved on her phone over the weekend, and I'm like, man, that put me in a place because I'm like, remember in the pandemic when there was no sports, and I was in the bathroom, and we weren't even in the same room?
Right.
That was something.
It was.
Now, all of a sudden, I'm back, and Carolina's playing Notre Dame in a game, a top 25 matchup in football on while I'm doing the show. It's crazy.
Yeah. No, doing live radio while there's an actual game going on is a completely different skill set. That's why I commend a lot of the ESPN weekend people, because they have to keep up to date on the NFL and college football while it's happening in real time and react to that stuff. And all these games are going on in real time, so commend them. No, it is funny, though, you mentioned about like what it was like before and what it's like now. I've made the argument that it was easier to prepare for a radio show with no sports than it is in the current iteration of how we're dealing with sports. The news changes every couple of hours, right? I don't even know what games are. State's not playing a basketball game tonight, right?
They are not.
Okay, but Carolina's in the Maui Asheville Invitational still, right? That game's being played?
Carolina's where we should be.
Okay.
Asheville.
In Asheville, right. I agree with you. We should be out there doing beer podcasts and doing the show. We should be hanging out with Titus and Tate, okay? Not just them doing their thing. Also, Duke's playing who now in football on Saturday?
Duke is actually going to play Miami now.
Okay. All right, now State's going to play Georgia Tech this weekend,
That's still on.
That hasn't been altered. Okay, Florida State, are they going to cancel another game?
Florida State is not going to play this weekend at all.
All right, they're changing their tune after 2 weeks of, hey, guys, thanks for the trip, but you know, we can't play this game right now. I'm just double-checking.
Florida State is in full Jesse Helms filibuster. I know we can't win, but I'm going to damn sure make sure we don't lose.
Man, I understand where they're coming from, but a little heads up, you know, before you decide to say, no, we can't play this game. Anyway, that's the difficulty of what's going on right now. And the strangest thing actually has occurred during the Thanksgiving break and the pandemic. Suddenly, I find myself, and it transformed over the weekend, Giglio.
Okay. Why? What happened?
I find myself, apparently, I should rename my Twitter account. Oh, go away, Joe Ovias. I'm going to rebrand myself as number one Bailey Hockman Stan account.
Okay.
That's me now, quarterback at NC State. I'm going to be the guy that has to tell people, hey, Dave Doran's doing a good job. And would it be so difficult to just say, good job? But no. We got the previous 7 years of Dave Doran that people just can't let go of. Man, I'm not trying to absolve the last 7 years of Dave Doran's performance and whether or not they could have had better seasons had they not lost to Wake Forest twice and all that other crap. I get all that stuff. That stuff still stands. But would it pain you to just go, you know what, Dave, good job this season, man. You're one win away from having a hell of a season when a lot of us thought you'd have a craptacular season, and we'd be wondering if you were going to be around for much longer. So, tip of the cap. Actually, Giglio, you just mentioned why I think Dave Doran's done a hell of a job, and I don't care how difficult the schedule might be in your eyes if people want to knock NC State's season so far. You mentioned Florida State. They're trying to filibuster their hell out of the year, right? And we've seen some other teams that just kind of go, right? We've seen this plenty this season. NC State has not been one of those teams. And that is something you commend to the coaching staff.
Yeah, and without a conference title to play for, without a national title to play for, they've been locked in. And just look no further than the Big Ten.
Yep.
Michigan and Penn State played this weekend, Joe. Somebody had to win. That's the only reason one team did.
Yeah.
Because those two teams have completely checked out on their season.
Dave Doran, after the win against Syracuse, the NCAA head coach, pretty much put it together the way it should be put together. NC State has won a different way pretty much every time this season. They're not always the prettiest wins, but they're getting the dubs, and that's what matters.
All right. Well, proud of our guys for overcoming a lot of mishaps and good play by Syracuse in the first half. And, you know, you can't turn the football over and give up a kickoff return and play the type of game you want to, but this team just fights and they find a way to win and they support each other, they pick each other up. So just, you know, happy to win a game. Winning ugly is okay. It's a lot better to tell you that. So we'll take it.
That's Dave Doran, NC State head coach, talking about winning ugly.
Sometimes when you write, and I still write for WRALsportsfan.com, when you're writing a game story, you have to be prepared for Team A to win or Team B to lose. Here's my lead that I had up until the fourth quarter for NC State. If you were trying to conjure up the worst case scenario for NC State's trip to last place Syracuse, you'd probably come up with a combination of the following: an early special teams touchdown by Syracuse, a fluky turnover by NC State to take points off the scoreboard, a fluky turnover by NC State to set up a Syracuse on a short field, a big play from Syracuse's anemic offense.
Yeah.
The Orange used all of the above to end a six-game losing streak and upset the Wolfpack at home on Saturday. They literally had all of those things happen.
Yes.
And State still, because of your guy, found a way to win the football game.
Yes, my guy, Bailey Hockman. That's me. Joe Ovias, number one Bailey Hockman fan account on Twitter. It me. Here's the thing. When I say put some respect on Bailey Hockman's name, I'm not telling you that he has to be in the Heisman Trophy running. I'm not telling you that he should receive ACC Player of the Year votes. He's not Sam Howell. He's not Trevor Lawrence. He's not even Jerkovich, the dude up at Boston College.
You haven't even named the all-ACC quarterback yet. Ian Book.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a second.
It's about time. You speaking of putting respect somewhere.
I will. Hold on a second, though. We'll get to that in a bit. But to wrap my point on Bailey Hockman, all I'm saying is put respect on the dude's name. He's been through two seasons of hell. Nobody likes him. They think the worst is going to happen. Fans. Nobody thinks anything good is going to happen.
West Durham likes him.
Well, he does.
He's from Georgia.
I'm going to borrow a phrase that Steve Logan used to use all the time. He's unafraid to stick his face in the fan. You know who likes that? NC State's coaching staff. You know who feeds off of that? The rest of the team. Even though he's not perfect, the one thing that I can count on with Bailey Hockman is that he ain't going to quit. And in a season that's been weird, sometimes that's 90% of the job. Just don't quit. Keep plugging away. And that's why it bothered me. For all the things that you just laid out about what happened at NC State, most of those things happened in the first quarter, in the first half. The 98-yard kickoff return, the fumble out of the end zone, which is a stupid rule anyway, but that's another conversation for another day. They gave up a 60-yard touchdown. Look, did he make bad decisions? Yes, but all three phases of the game for NC State in the first half were bad decisions. The safety, which was an ugly play on Bailey Hockman's part. They should have been in that situation in the first place.
And I would even argue throwing the ball out of the end zone ensured it wasn't fumbled for a touchdown. So it actually wasn't the worst.
Not the worst.
I didn't even list it on the bad things that have happened because, in my opinion, it wasn't one of them.
And look, did he force a throw that ended up popping out, ends up being an interception that gets taken back to the five? Sure, it was fluky, though.
But it bounced off of C.J. Riley's hands. I'm not going to blame him for that.
When I see people on social media, people who cover the team, too, and they immediately go to the, well, you got to bench Bailey Hockman and put Ben Finley in there. Bro, what are you watching? Are you watching the same football game I'm watching? If you think Bailey Hockman's the reason why they're down at halftime and in a game that's still within reach for them if you actually thought about it, you think Bailey Hockman is – you think Ben Finley was going to be the answer? And here's the other thing. In one analysis, it's, man, the offensive line is doing a really bad job today. Bailey Hockman's out there running for his life. Then what makes you think Ben Finley's going to do a better job? So I get accused oftentimes of, do you even football, bro? You know what? Based on some of the reactions that I see, the knee-jerk reactions that I see while you watch a football game, I would flip that back on you. Do you state, bro? Because if you've watched NC State at all this season and pay attention to how they've won games, well, then you don't bench Bailey Hockman. And if anything, you actually go, hey, Bailey, thanks. Thanks for what you've done this season. Because you've had every reason to say, screw this. And you haven't. and the coaching staff is fed off of that, and I think the team feeds off of that. So just tip your cap in a weird-ass season and go, State, good job. Why is that so hard? Can't please people, apparently.
What's the NFL doing? Like, look, the NFL's in a tough spot when it comes to trying to schedule all these games with the postponements, handing out fines, trying to get the games on time, trying to avoid a Week 18, trying to get to the playoffs on time and everything else. But I feel like this weekend, really, it burst at the seams from an entire quarterback room being out, leaving Kendall Hinton, Wake Forest Deacon Pro, to quarterback a game. And then you've got the Ravens situation unfolding and when exactly they're going to play that game. It just seems like things have kind of gotten out of hand a bit for the NFL, or am I misreading this?
Okay, so things aren't great right now, right? And that is reflective of society right now also. So we'll keep that in context and perspective. What happened with the Broncos has happened with other teams. Other teams have had position groups ostensibly wiped out or decimated, right? It happened with the Niners on their Thursday night football game at wide receiver. It happened with the Raiders and their offensive line several weeks ago. So that happens. The point that the league keeps making that I want to impress upon everyone here is that it is incumbent upon the league to identify where the virus is and then isolate the virus to control the spread. And so in the case of the Broncos, they identified it with the backup quarterback, Jeff Driscoll, who had it. They then isolated him and his high-risk close contacts because they have about three dozen cases from several weeks across the league of guys who were testing negative, who were high-risk close contacts. And then, oh, what do you know? They tested positive from that person. So those four quarterbacks with the Broncos who did not test positive very well may test positive. And even if they do not, the league followed their own protocols just like they did with other position groups. It just happened to happen at the quarterback position. But when you look at the Ravens, you can't put that team out there on the field as they continue to have more positive tests because you have not identified and or isolated the virus. And that is the difference between the Ravens situation and everybody else.
Jonathan Jones, senior NFL reporter, CBS Sports. You can catch him on CBS Sports HQ. I hope they got you some better chalk this week, Double J.
We kept things at all of the high tech graphics on this one. We didn't go low tech. Nobody busted out a yellow pad.
Oh man. Whoa. No doodling on the yellow pad for you, sir. If I did doodle on a yellow pad, it would say, can we just shut the season down and call the Chiefs the champions? Because who the heck's gonna beat them, Double J?
Listen, they look really good. And Patrick Mahomes is the human cheat code. He is the guy that we don't have to overthink this. He is the MVP. And that's with respect to Aaron Rodgers and whomever else. But he's number one. Everybody else is number two. And so, yeah, if right now we played the Super Bowl next week, the Chiefs would absolutely be the favorites. And I don't care who they play. But, you know, we've been at this position before.
Sure.
Where we think that team is a juggernaut. And then all of a sudden, boom, something happens, right? There's a David Tyree helmet catch. And so, listen, I would love to see the Chiefs play the Saints in Super Bowl 55 with the team at full health, or however healthy Drew Brees possibly can be. When you mix in their experience, Sean Payton, I believe one of the top three play callers in the NFL, along with Andy Reid, and then throw in Kyle Shanahan with the Niners. That's the matchup that I am looking forward to, because I think the Saints, without Taysom Hill, but with Drew Brees at quarterback, that they are, without question, the best team in an NFC where it's hard to figure out who's leading the pack and who's not. I believe it's the Saints.
But they have been for the last 3 years, and they somehow stumble over their own feet when they get into the playoffs. That's with Brees. It's called being old.
That's exactly right. Now, I mean, the refs stumbled over the Saints' feet a couple of years ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, right. In the NFC Championship game, that was the play that would have won them the game, and they lost the game. Of course, they went
to overtime.
Well,
they still had a chance to win the game.
They did. They absolutely did. I'm not saying that they were historically jobbed or anything, but
right.
That was the game right there, if you call it right
sure.
there. But no, they have not been able to put it together in January for whatever reason. And that's, again, to your earlier point, that's why you play the games. That's why you have the January gauntlet. What I am still upset about, and what is starting to rear its head a little bit, is removing the first round bye from the number two overall seed, because the Chiefs very well could end this season 15-1. The Steelers could very well end it 16-0, and the Chiefs still have to go and play on wild card weekend.
Well, heck, if they go to the 16 teams, Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. If they go to the 16-team format, Double J, nobody would have a bye.
Yeah, that's right. And I hope that we don't do that, because the NFL playoffs, they were already perfect with six teams. They went ahead and expanded it to seven against my wishes. I don't know why Roger didn't listen to me. And now we want to push it out to eight, where 50% of the league gets in. Listen, this isn't the NBA, where the Eastern Conference 7 and 8 seed finish, 12 games below 500 and still get in. I don't want to see that. You work very hard for 16 games in a 17-week season to get to the playoffs. You need to reward those teams that actually play good football a majority of the time. And the fact that outside of the NFC East, we could see a team hovering at 500 getting to the postseason, I don't really like that.
Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. On the flip side of the Kansas City thing, you have the Buccaneers and some, I guess, a palace intrigue again. Does palace intrigue just follow Tom Brady wherever he goes now? He walked off the press conference or the Zoom teleconference. There's some questions as to whether or not Bruce Arians, is the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is utilizing Brady's talents at this point. Who's calling what? What's the real story here in Tampa?
That's interesting, and I don't know if it is tangible or intangible. Is it the karmic justice of this is what happens when you add Antonio Brown? Mm-hmm. You lose 3 out of 4. Is it Tom Brady, who the GOAT, didn't do the correct homework on Bruce Arians and what his system does, mm-hmm. especially to quarterbacks in their first year in that system, where he just kind of leaves you out there open and available to make some mistakes? Or maybe Tom Brady thought, listen, I'm Tom Brady. I'm going to be able to work with him and fix some of those things. It's interesting because I anticipated and expected these struggles from the Bucs at the beginning of the season, sure. considering the offseason they had. And then in late September, early October, they started getting it rolling, right? And then a few weeks ago, we saw what they did to Green Bay, and you say, wow, all right. But now against good to great teams, they are really, really struggling. The Saints, the Rams, and now, of course, against the Chiefs. Now, Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator, had a very bend but do not break defense, where still they only held the Chiefs to 27 points, where Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill were on their way, on pace at least, to set some single game records. So there are still some positives there. The Bucs are still going to make the playoffs. If they get the 5 seed, they're going to win in the wild card when they face the Giants or Washington in that wild card round. But yeah, you cannot be inspired by this Bucs team right now. And what's the issue? Is it a chicken or the egg? Is it Brady or Arians? I think it's just the fact that it's their first year together.
Mm-hmm. And it could be their only year together, right?
Well, he signed a 2-year deal, and I don't know if I would have to anticipate that it would be a very long offseason where there are some decisions made in conjunction with Tom Brady, the player slash coach slash GM.
So, Jonathan Jones, CBSSports.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. The Detroit Lions decided to fire Matt Patricia and their general manager. We all kind of knew this is where things were headed because it's not worked out for Patricia in Detroit. But when they announced it, was that 5D chess on behalf of the Lions by dropping that news in the middle of Michigan getting beat too? Because, hey, man, there's this guy who might not be at Michigan for much longer either. Hey, you know what? Maybe John Harbaugh or Jim Harbaugh might want to go back to the NFL and escape what's going on at Michigan right now. I don't know. Was that a coincidence? I'm not sure.
Listen, I love it. I love the conspiracy theory, and I'll be the first to throw on a tinfoil hat. But but that would also necessitate and mean that the Lions are a competent enough franchise to do something like that.
Yeah.
And as we have seen for the past 7 decades, they are not. So,
but you have to be bad at your job. How bad at your job do you have to be to get people to actually look back on the Jim Caldwell era, a guy who is very underappreciated in the NFL, and now suddenly we're ready to reevaluate Caldwell's experience in Detroit? That's how bad Patricia was.
Listen, I'm going to say something that you two certainly know, most of the listeners know. It's not dissimilar to Larry Fedora and his tenure at UNC, where Fedora certainly had far more success at UNC than Patricia ever did in Detroit. But simply that you probably could have bought yourself another year if you were just a nice and likable guy,
right?
If you played the media game, if you weren't a guy that players didn't want to play for, but instead, as you're walking to the gallows, who is shouting out your name, being like, "Hey, let me go for him," and you didn't hear that out of anyone in Chapel Hill, and you certainly didn't hear it out of anyone in Detroit. In fact, you heard the exact opposite out of Detroit, where folks were dancing on Matt Patricia's grave, in large part because of how he treated players in his first year, where he thought, "I'm going to establish the Patriot way and things are going to go my way." Well, that didn't work out, and he'd been trying to dig himself out of the hole that he created for himself ever since then.
That was a G you just used, by the way.
He did.
Jonathan Jones, CBS Sports, joining us here on the OG. I'm just clarifying for our censors out there. All right, give me the most impressive part about the Panthers' clock management. They get the ball back first and goal on the Minnesota 9 after a bungled punt. They somehow run four plays in 19 seconds? Is that more impressive, or is the it's fourth and goal from the 3, you have a 3-point lead, and you decide, nah, I'm good, let's kick another field goal?
Yeah, that's a fascinating case study, right? And listen, in that moment, I think there are any number of coaches who would probably take the points right there. Mm-hmm. I think an overwhelming majority would. But it's almost like going for 2 when you're down 9. Does it take that one person to say, you know what? No, I want you to go, if it's 97 yards, I need you to go 60 yards in order to kick the field goal and tie me. I want to see that happen.
With no timeouts, by the way.
Yeah, that's important context.
Right.
Minnesota did not have timeouts.
And your best player is the running back, and mm-hmm. you can't really run with him because mm-hmm. you don't have timeouts. So it's Kirk Cousins, go tie us the game.
Sure.
That's a great question. Listen, I do, and I think I've talked with you guys about this. All that talk about, whew, boy, I don't know if the Panthers are going to have Joe Brady around much longer. There have been a few games here now, the last few weeks, certainly in the 2-minute situation. And now you talk about play calling for the Carolina Panthers once they got down there, that, you know, maybe he is just the 31-year-old offensive coordinator who still needs some seasoning in the NFL. So I would just pump the brakes a little bit on that, especially when you look around the league and there are some highly qualified candidates who have put in a whole lot more sweat equity into this game than Joe Brady, who's fantastic. But maybe not yet.
I'm convinced Matt Rhule, head coach of the Panthers, does not want to make the playoffs.
I think so.
I mean, they're sitting at 6th right now in the draft order, if I'm not mistaken. Because think about this. I mean, the whole sell was we're not going to be good this year. And had they won that game, had they beat Minnesota, they would have been one game behind Arizona, who lost from the last NFC wildcard spot. And suddenly, hey, if you're in the playoff chase in your first year, a little expectations, a little bit better than advertised. But then you're also screwing up your rebuild because you would like that draft pick. I think there's some mental calculus there.
There may be. Listen, I think that everybody in that building wants to win, mm-hmm. right? And I think that there are some folks who, if they at the end of the season when they sit down, they take a breath, they're going to understand that, oh, you know what? Maybe that loss was actually better for us than that win.
Yeah.
They don't think that right now. Matt Rhule certainly does not think that right now. But I'll just say this. They had a fantastic draft last year picking, where were they, 8 or 9 last season. So, you know, they just showed themselves that they can draft really well.
They can.
In the top 10. So does it matter if we're 6? Does it matter if we're 9? Well, it certainly matters if your quarterback is the guy who's going to go at 6 and he's not going to be there at 9 when you want him.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't start – that's chess. That's like 17-dimensional chess. That's something for Baby Yoda.
You know what? Look at Jonathan coming through with a Star Wars
circle,
reference.
Baby. Full circle, baby.
Full circle. No. It's good because he could be using the Force. Jonathan has no idea what he's talking about, but he made a good enough reference for Star Wars. All right, man. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, fellas.
Alcoa presents
Great Moments in Gambling History.
That is right, Joe Ovius. One man's bad beat is another man's miracle cover. Let's go to the Great Turf in Ypsilanti, Michigan for the Eastern Michigan Eagles and the Central Michigan Chippewas. Your friend Johnny in Jersey, where such activities are legal, has Eastern Michigan +7. The Eagles led 17-6 at the half and 20-6 at the start of the fourth quarter. That's when the Chips scored a touchdown quickly to open up the fourth.
Fourth and 4 from the 9. Nichols with an alley to the end zone. Touchdown, Chippewas.
That's Jason Knapp from CBS Sports Network. Malik Zaire, former Notre Dame quarterback, is his color analyst. He'll be jumping in this action soon. So the Chips tack on a two-point conversion, but still, Joe, it's 20-14. Our guys, the Emu, they're plus +7. We're good. They have a six-point lead. Even better, Emu hits a chip shot field goal on the next drive. So now it's 23-14. The Chips come right back and score a touchdown. No big deal. It was a long 12-play drive. Now, though, it's 23-21. The good guys are still winning and have the ball with 4:23 left.
Little option. Ball loose. Recovered by Central Michigan. Trying to pitch it to Samson Evans. And recovered by Amir Sadiq.
Samson, oh no, don't touch the hair. He fumbles at his own 7. Still, Joe, this is fine. The Chips score a touchdown and it's 28-23. Mm-hmm. Emu loses, but we cover. What's this? Emu holds the Chips to a field goal. Now it's 24-23. Emu's losing. That's fine. There's 2 minutes and 30 seconds left. Emu gets the ball back. They drive, so what? They lose. We still cover. Or they drive and score. We win. Everybody wins. Oh, no. No, 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 no. What is this? What is happening, Jason Knapp?
Canoe on the outside. Tipped and intercepted. The Chips D comes up massive again. Devontae Reed with the INT.
What a deafening blow. This is so in this game. Truthfully, losing your starting quarterback, but you're getting gifts like this. It must be the Thanksgiving spirit because it's the gift that keeps on giving. What a play.
Way to rub it in, Malik Zaire. Appreciate that, buddy. Fluky interception. Now this is bad. But it's not like the Chips need to score, right? Sweet patchouli, what are we doing?
Eagles still have 2 timeouts, but Lewis going to put in the touchdown that may seal it.
May seal it? What? Heal thyself, doctor. Yes. PAT and a miracle cover for the Chippewas. 31-23. Your ticket is no good at this window, sir.
What team? What team? What team?
Yeah! And so, we all know the big topics of conversation. So we use the All-OG team to highlight some things that we feel are important and entertaining and need to be called out. Who's on your third team, Julio?
My third team is Bill Vinovich. He was the referee of the Cardinals-Patriots game. Can we get some truth serum for Vinovich? Because on that 3rd-and-12 scramble by Cam Newton when he was hit on his way out of bounds, they threw a flag on Isaiah Simmons at the end of the play, and it helped set up the Patriots game-winning field goal. If Newton was still with the Panthers, would he have gotten that flag?
No.
Seriously.
Absolutely not.
Is that the power of Patriot Pat? I think it is.
Or is he finally old enough to get that call?
I don't know.
I mean, Newton is up there in age. My third team, all OG, goes to our friends at the Wolfpacker.
Oh, they were trolling you. I feel like they were trolling you this
morning. They're a website / magazine. They do a fine job. And I feel like I was being trolled over the weekend when they decided to do another Pac Pro tweet, but with a bit of a twist. Do we have this, Rand? Do we have the audio of Mike Florio on Sunday Night Football in America in the United States show on NBC, which you can catch on WREL, highlighting one of the plays that was used by the Buffalo Bills? And if there's one thing that I love about NC State football Twitter is that there's any mere mention of anything related to that college football program, they're on it. And here we are with the reference to NC State.
Josh Allen after the game about where that trick play came from. It actually comes from North Carolina State. Brian Daboll, the offense coordinator, saw it. He liked it. They call it Wolfpack. And Allen said he had one job on that play. Make sure that the toss to Cole Beasley was actually a lateral so it wouldn't be 2 illegal forward passes on the same play.
So again, that was from Sunday Night Football in America.
They threw a double pass, which is actually the same play State used against West Virginia last year. Thayer Thomas, if you will.
One of their best quarterbacks on the roster, Thayer Thomas. Now, the Wolfpacker tweeted this out earlier today, basically not a Pac Pro, but a Pac in the Pro moment
from Sunday. And yes, they were trolling me.
Yeah.
They absolutely were trolling me.
Hey, man, they're
me.
Leaning in. I like it.
That's fine, man. Do you. And then they doubled down and saying, hey, Joe, let me tell you about that time the 8-3 Bills took a page out of the NC State playbook, and they used the Dexter's Laboratory meme where it's Dexter going omelette de fromage into somebody's ear. A great episode of Dexter's Laboratory. Who's on your second team, OG?
Well, I think we're going to overlap here, and that's okay, because Vanderbilt fired Coach Derek Mason yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, look, you got all this good pub from Sarah Fuller.
Yeah.
Having this great moment in gender equity.
Yeah. Sarah Fuller, goalie for the women's soccer team.
Right.
Emergency situation where they brought her on to be a kicker in an emergency situation. And they weren't good enough to put her in field goal position.
Which was fair.
Fine.
Maybe. But I'm thinking to myself, Vanderbilt, just have your one moment in the sun here, please. Why do you need to turn around and fire the coach? Mason was 27-55 in six seasons. Really, his biggest problem was he followed the best coach in school history,
yeah,
in James Franklin.
Yeah.
Even still, went to a bowl game twice, beat Tennessee in three straight years, which had never happened. Beginning of the year, Joe, they had seven players opt out, eight other players transfer. Look, I get it. You're printing money in the SEC, but guys, it's a pandemic. Leave it to South Carolina and the other delusional schools to fire their coach. Save yourself a couple of dollars and the goodwill.
I think I'm... Hear me out on this before I give you my second team all OG. Maybe they wanted to fire Mason after the Sarah Fuller story
because it would get
buried. Because everybody's talking about Sarah Fuller. They're not talking about the fact that they just fired their coach and the conversations of, well, what does Vanderbilt expect in a coaching staff and those types of things. I don't know. Maybe there's a little method to the madness. I have no idea. My second team all OG goes to Carolina Panthers play-by-play announcer Mick Mixon. He is a treasure. We love Mick Mixon on this program. And there was history made in the Carolina Panthers loss to the Minnesota Vikings. Jeremy Chinn, who's going to be your defensive rookie of the year, the dude's been outstanding all season long, in a 10-second span had two scoops and scores. That's never been done. And here's Mick Mixon on the second scoop and score.
Do we call that a double chin? Just going to let that breathe.
Come on,
for a second.
Double chin. Say it louder.
1,002.
Jim Zocchi, he had the good joke. Mick's got to let that. Come on. You got to let that air out. You got to let that. That was a good one. A double chin. Come on. That was like the headline everywhere for Jeremy Chin's scoop and score double. All right. All right. Who's on your first team, OG?
Look, I'm really not trying to begrudge a man's ability to eat, but ESPN hired Danny Manning to be a college basketball analyst? Here's Manning's tweet. Very fortunate and blessed to be working in the studio this week covering NCAA basketball, basically. Look, Danny Manning, number one overall pick in the NBA draft, played the NBA for a long time, made a lot of money in the NBA, had a chance at Tulsa, had a chance at Wake Forest. How about we give someone else a turn, Danny? Huh? Because Manning wasn't that good with the media while he was at Wake Forest. And for someone with his experience, he wasn't that interesting either. Not to mention, his substitution patterns and his use of timeouts suggested that he didn't really understand the difference between college basketball and pro basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of people out there who should be analyzing games for ESPN, not Danny Manning.
My first team all OG, not necessarily overlap with what you brought up with Vanderbilt, but it does have to do with Sarah Fuller, the goalie for the women's soccer team who was put in an emergency situation for Vanderbilt, and she only had one play. Vanderbilt did nobody any favors by being terrible.
41-0, yeah.
I mean, just they did nothing in this game, and it's unfortunate that her only opportunity to do anything was to start the second half, where she performed a squib kick. This was all by design. And here's Sarah Fuller, again, the women's soccer goalie who was put in an emergency situation. It's a great story. It's an inspirational story. She's the first woman to play Power 5 football. And here she is after the game with an exchange I think is important with Missouri head coach Eli Drinkwitz. Local people remember Drink as the offensive coordinator at NC State before he took the job at App State, and then he took the job at Missouri. And she explained after the game an exchange between Drinkwitz, who's got four daughters, I think, and Fuller.
Four, yep.
So he came up to me and he said, hey, I'm a dad of four daughters and they're watching today. And this is just incredible what you're doing. And that's been like the most amazing thing is I've had coaches come up to me, dads come up to me and say, like, you're inspiring me and you're inspiring my daughters. And I just think that's so amazing.
So that was Sarah Fuller after the game. Great story. But my first team All-OG goes to a very specific demographic that looked at this phenomenon, and their reaction was one of two things. It was either terrible kick, which it wasn't. It was a squib kick that was executed amazingly well. If you want to look at a squib kick that did not work, there was one earlier in the day. I believe it was Texas Tech. The highlight was all over the place. It was a poorly performed squib kick that resulted in an immediate touchdown return for the other team. So, supposed football knowers watch a perfectly executed squib kick, and rather than going, that's a good kick, she did what she was supposed to do, it was, oh, they're hiding a weak leg. Why couldn't she boot it out of the end zone? Which led to the other aspect that came out of the clearly Mason Vanderbilt, they're only doing this for the attention that comes along with putting a woman on the football field. And I think the irony there is that people going on and on and on and on about the attention-seeking of Vanderbilt, what are you doing by tweeting about this or going on TV and complaining about this sort of stuff? You're also looking for attention. And it really comes down to one simple thing. When I see the complaints about Sarah Fuller, whether it was you trying to point out that it wasn't a good kick or that you think it's attention-seeking, it tells me that you give off small penis energy. So you get my first team, all OG. Shout out to Small Penis Energy Twitter.
It's time to play You're Full of Shit, Giglio. Listen, I've known Joe has been full of shit since 1975, so this is old news to me. Here's Joe Ovius with the rules, but I can already tell you, Giglio is definitely full of shit. And I should know, I'm his mother.
Thank you very much, Nora. Yes, Giglio is full of it. He's got some questions, or some trivia, I should say. It's up to you to determine whether that trivia is true or not. Let's say hello to Michael in Youngsville. Michael, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, y'all?
I was actually in Youngsville last night. Shout out to Hillridge Farms. They did a very good job with the drive-through Night of Lights.
Oh, very nice. Yes, it's a very nice show out here.
It it was efficient. I was impressed with Hillridge and how they handled that yesterday. Mike, we got Matt and Garner. Matt, what's up? Matt.
What's up, guys?
What up? We got Eddie in Goldsboro. Eddie, what's up?
Hey, got it going on.
Right, man, we're just chilling. Hopefully you can win some gift cards from the original Flying Burrito. So this is how it works. Giglio's got the trivia. Some of it's true. Some of it's made up. If you think it's true, don't say anything. But if you think you made it up, shout out your name, and Nora will do the rest.
You're full of s***, Giglio.
If you're right and he made it up, you win. But if you're wrong and it's true, you're out of the game. The last person standing or the first person to call Giglio out for his BS wins. Let's go.
Lavelle Edwards has more wins than Mac Brown.
Matt.
Matt.
You're full of s***, Giglio.
Matt, I'm so sorry. The BYU coach had 257. Mac has 251. Michael and Eddie, Mac Brown has more wins than Lou Holtz.
Yeah. Eddie.
Eddie.
You're full of s***, Giglio.
I am sorry, Eddie. Mac's 251 is two more than Lou Holtz. Michael, that means you are today's winner of a $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito.
Michael didn't have to do anything. Michael.
That's the easiest $20 gift card I've ever got.
He had to listen to your boring story about seeing Christmas lights.
Dude. No.
Yes. Michael, that was his penance.
Youngsville, appreciate it, man. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito.
I appreciate it, fellas.
All right. Jonathan Randall gets your information.
Yeah.
So now I do it.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, got a thing about State Syracuse. That game was, at best, drunk towards the end. Mm. And so, yeah, if you didn't have a dog in the fight, you just kind of wanted it to keep going. So I had to sing about it.
Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good game.
Oh yeah.
It's such a shame that no one is here to see it live. Yeah, we're setting up a great ending, so don't spike me now. Don't spike me, cause I'm having a good time. I'm having a good time. I'm a super fan reaching for my jaw like I dropped it. Can't believe what is happening. I'm a coach looking for a second win like Dino Babers. I'm getting close, close, close. There's no stopping me. I'm burning to the end zone. 72 degrees, that's why they call it the Carrier Dome.
Get it?
Gonna steal it when it's in you home. I wanna make a supersonic fan out of you. Don't spike me now. I'm having such a good time. Hang on to the ball. Don't spike me now. If you wanna have a good time, make a different call. So don't spike me now. Don't spike me, cause I'm having a good time. I don't want to stop at home.
Yeah. Well done, Rand.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio Show Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.